Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Josh Mangelson, and today our episode is a fair trade episode, where we talk about faith journeys and what led people to Community of Christ. And today we're going to be interviewing Jason Eyre, who officially has his records in the Provo House Church, and he also attends regularly up in Salt Lake. How's it going, Jason?
Hi, Josh. It's great to be here. It's fun to be on the Project Zion podcast.
So we're just going to get into your faith journey and what led you to Community of Christ. If we could go back, you grew up Mormon, or as they like to now be called, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I just want to know what your experiences were like growing up in a Mormon household.
Sure. So my experiences may be a little bit different than some of the typical people in Utah, because I grew up in rural southern Utah, a little town called Beaver, and that's where I grew up pretty much from 4 years old on. My parents had lived up north when I was younger, but I don't remember any of that. It was a great little town. I knew my grandparents on both sides of my family, and also was pretty close to great grandmothers on my mom's side, and also on my dad's side. I had all my grandparents and great grandparents growing up. So it was a pretty neat experience that way. The culture of the area was that people usually got married when they were 18 and quickly had kids. And myself being the oldest of the oldest of the oldest, that's why I was fortunate to know so many of my family members. And it was a great place to grow up. The church was your typical church in a small town. There were plenty of Jack Mormons and there were plenty of really good people. The leadership in the church tended to run with the seminary teacher and then also with the doctors in town and that type of thing. Those were usually the bishops and people like that. And I grew up enjoying the LDS church, served a mission in Oregon in the Eugene area, and really enjoyed the green and the beauty that was up there, and was very pleased to not have to go somewhere across the world and get parasites and all that crazy stuff. After my mission, I came back and went to Southern Utah University in Cedar City, which is only about 50 miles south, and then ended up in St. George. And my wife's from Southern Utah as well.
That's where you met her, is down there as well.
Yeah, I met her after I graduated from college. I know that the culture in Mormonism is to get married as soon as you can after your mission, and I really tried to buck that trend. And kind of just withheld it, and had a great time with a lot of friends in college and great roommates and great relationships and friendships there. But after I graduated from college, about a year after that, I realized I probably should get married. And so that's when I started trying to date again and meet people. And I was set up with my wife through a friend's ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily a blind date, because I'd met her brother and I'd known it's a small area, so those kind of things. But I was excited when we got set up together and we went to a fireside and then we went on a date and went to the movie and a few things and just really hit it off. And so this year we'll be married 20 years. Oh, we're getting ready to celebrate our 20th anniversary in June. So
yeah, any big plans for that?
We're supposed to go on a cruise, but I've got to get passports, and at least the government's not shut down anymore, so that'll probably happen.
Yeah, unless it closes down again.
Yeah, but we did get married in the St. George Temple, and you know, I checked the appropriate boxes off, and in the LDS faith, I did serve in leadership positions and tried to do all I could to fulfill my calling, and had some great experiences with those around me as I was an Elders Quorum president, or also served as ward clerk. And I think serving as ward clerk was really where the story kind of changes. I'd had my ups and downs with being fully active in the church with little kids, because it's difficult to try and fight your kids for 3 hours a week at church. And we figured at some weeks it was easier just to stay home than fight the fight, but...
Yeah, so going back, like growing up in a rural area, for those that don't know, in Mormonism, generally speaking, the closer you are to Salt Lake, the more rigid faith typically is for a lot of people. Not everybody. And by rigid, I mean just like how strict they are about keeping certain rules. They definitely have their checklists. They have their vice lists to avoid. But rural Utah, like down San Pete County, like the central part of Utah, St. George might be different, but like down there, it's a little bit different. Was that true for you? Was it more relaxed where you were at?
I think it probably has a lot to do with what percentage of people are of the same faith and those kind of things. And I was in an area that would have been 90% plus LDS.
Okay.
And so everyone understood what the rules were and everyone understood what the culture was. And the town I lived in had a bar that stayed in business for years and years. And the coffee shops served plenty of coffee, but all good people. And there was definitely a self-righteousness about certain things. And I didn't really subscribe to that community. It wasn't my thing.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just speaking from what I've seen with like my grandparents growing up in central Utah and then. Also, my boss, he's active Mormon as far as I know, and he grew up in Torrey, but he chews and he drinks coffee every morning, so he's definitely not one of the strict observers of the Word of Wisdom, as Mormons still observe to this day. But I was just wondering if it was more relaxed for you. But
well, there definitely were. I've definitely had family members that have found overcoming alcoholism difficult and have tended many in my family members, I should say, have tended many an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting.
Okay.
And I got to see the reality of vices on both sides. I didn't necessarily subscribe to them much. It just wasn't really my thing. I wasn't necessarily self-righteous, but I didn't really have any reason to smoke cigarettes or chew tobacco or things like that.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's a healthy place to be for sure. So when you went on a mission, when you went to Eugene, Oregon, were you totally in, completely believing at that point?
Absolutely. And in my mission, I had some pretty neat spiritual experiences. Read the Book of Mormon a couple times. Read through the Bible commentaries with Bruce R. McConkie and Mormon doctrine and all of those kind of things. And definitely had my very literal views on so many things. And one thing that was interesting for me, being up in the Northwest in the early '90s was there was a ballot measure that they were testing out with these constitutional amendments to add protections against or for LGBT. And I remember seeing that area was definitely a lot more active LGBT than Utah was at the time. And there was a lot of people.
There's like a college culture there, right? That's just a little bit more liberal than.
Yeah, Eugene's a very liberal area. And I spent a year of the 2 years of my mission in Eugene and spent both winters there. And that's when the elections would have taken place as well. The joke that I was always told was that old hippies don't, and when they feel like they need to leave Berkeley, they don't die. They just go to Eugene. And so Eugene was a very liberal place. And I also did serve in Corvallis, which was a lot more conservative. It's a college campus as well, but Oregon State is more of the college and the medical school type things. And so it was a lot more conservative than Eugene itself was. And I did serve in the northern areas of the mission, which were Kaiser, Salem area. And then I also served down in Yreka, California, which is the far south. And that I served there in the summertime. It was about 100 degrees every day and definitely it's beautiful country, but it was hard to be out in that kind of heat. But I did my best as a missionary and worked hard. I was lucky enough to have a car my entire mission. And that was something that probably happens for very few missionaries, but I have a feeling that had to do with my mission president and where he felt I should be. So
okay. So not every companionship had cars in your mission?
No. But the areas I served in all did have cars assigned to them, so.
Okay. And so you came back, you went to school, SUU, which is Cedar City, that's southern Utah. It's about, for those that don't know, 45 minutes to an hour north of St. George. What did you study there?
So I was trying to figure out what to study because my mom and grandmother had told me I could be a doctor or a lawyer, and those were the choices I had, and I kind of liked computers, and so I figured I would do some work that now we call information technology. It just wasn't quite a career choice back then, but I stumbled into working for the state while I went to college. I worked with the Department of Human Services and did their computer tech support and set up their networks. And I also worked at the little hospital in Beaver and learned networking and setting up printers and things like that there. And so that led me into, I got a degree in business administration.
Okay.
Because that was like the closest really generic degree I could find that really fit it.
Right.
And my minor, I think, was in information systems at the time. And, and from there, I was able to find career paths that took me into, I worked at as the tech guy for the biggest hog farm west of the Mississippi, which the people in Iowa will appreciate that and the people in North Carolina. But it was a farm system that had about over 500,000 hogs.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we were trying to keep the genetics straight, and there was a database that talked about all the reproductive fluids and things like that. And it was a very interesting job, and I learned a lot from it. I just struggled because there wasn't anyone in Beaver County who wasn't my relative. And so I moved back to Cedar City, and that's where I met my wife. And I worked at a place there called Metalcraft Technologies. It was an aerospace company, and it was a great job. I enjoyed working with learning airplane parts and seeing kind of that airplane culture. And they wanted to have their own tech spinoff, like Boeing has an IT services company and things like that. And so they bought the local internet service provider. And then I ended up running that for about a year. And that took me to St. George. And so I enjoyed St. George was different.
So did you get married in Cedar City?
I got married in Cedar City, and we moved. I got married in June, and by November, we were living in St. George.
Okay. And so how was St. George different?
So St. George was really different as far as the church presence, the good old boys club, the politics, extremely conservative. I think if you were to look at one of the most, and still today, I think Washington County is one of the most conservative counties in the country. I know that during the Trump election, when the voting machines started having problems, that they immediately dissented on that because that could have derailed that election. It was just that much of a populace and such a conservative populace. And it was interesting being in St. George. I met a lot of interesting people there. I worked in two or three different jobs with software development and things like that. I also traveled quite a bit because I was doing consulting work, working in technology. There wasn't a lot in St. George, but there were a lot of flights in and out that would take you to big, important places to be an important person. And that's what I learned from consulting. Ultimately, in St. George, we became fully active in the church and really got to like our wards at the end and felt pretty close to them. And then a job opportunity came up to work in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And I talked with my wife about it, and she really didn't seem that excited about moving so far away from her family. And then she came home from church a couple weeks later and said that she had really felt that we needed to move to Nashville, and she was crying because she wasn't that anxious to be that far away. Yeah. So we basically got everything packed up, and I basically got in the car, and then they flew out the next month, and we lived in Nashville for 8 years, and we really enjoyed being in Nashville. We enjoyed being in an area where I like to call it the mission field.
Mm-hmm.
And we enjoyed having not everyone around us be of the same faith, and our kids got to learn a little bit more about diversity and got to understand what it was like to be persecuted in some ways. And And it was a good experience for us. Out of Nashville is also where I became a financial clerk. And I think working as a financial clerk kind of showed me a different set of workings for the church. And
so financial clerk works directly in the LDS church, works directly underneath the bishop. So a bishop acts as a pastor, but then also for the temporal money side of things as well. And then financial clerk takes care of the
writes all the checks and the bishop signs them. So it's kind of like a financial officer, but the bishop is the pastor and has to, and everything has to have two signatures, and it's very corporate aligned and very formal, probably is the way to say it. And so I did enjoy serving as ward clerk, and it was a good experience, but it really started eroding in my spirituality because I was going to church and doing financial things and,
You're not getting any of the spiritual side.
Yeah, and I found I could escape from almost every meeting and go write checks and, and things like that. And so that's what ended up happening. So I ended up asking to be released. And about that time, I had some friends from Nashville who had – Nashville was with Vanderbilt University and many of the universities there. There were a lot of transient people who would move out there, go to school – attend the LDS wards there and then move other places after they finish their schooling to get real jobs. And one of those friends had introduced me to the Mormon Stories podcast, and I started listening to that.
So somebody that had gone through a faith transition prior to you was expressing doubts and then introduced you to that.
Yeah, I reached out to him and asked him a little bit about it, and that was about the time they were getting ready to excommunicate John Dolan. And so that made it that much more interesting. And so I ended up spending quite a bit of time listening to episodes of Mormon Stories that really opened up my mind to just so many different things about my faith that I had no idea of, not just the historical things, but the thoughts on the Book of Mormon and many things with that. During that time, we decided that living in Nashville really was far away from our kids' grandparents and that we needed to have the kids come back and be closer to them. And so we literally sold our house to our neighbor for cash, which was a miracle, we thought, and got in the car and packed up the house and drove back to Utah. And right before I shut the internet off in Nashville, my sister called and told me that there was an IT job in Panguitch, which is this little town where my wife's family lives. And we had planned on staying with my wife's family till we could find something up here in the Silicon Slopes. And so I knew the superintendent in Panguitch and called him and got the application all filled out before we shut the internet off. And we drove out. We got here on Sunday night to Panguitch. On Monday morning, I interviewed and I started on Friday working at the school district in Panguitch. And
yeah, that's a quick process. A lot of, well, it's definitely a small town, but a lot of jobs, it seems like it takes months to get you on.
Yeah. And that job hadn't been open for 14 years. So it felt like it was there for me. And I had a wonderful time. I did some pretty amazing things. My philosophy on technology is it's really an empowering tool. And I used it to help these kids growing up in this extremely rural area and many of them in poverty, you know, use technology as a way to really enhance their lives and enhance their education. And it was a wonderful experience. We ended up living there for 2 years and really enjoyed it. During those 2 years, the November policy hit.
So refresh for people what the November policy was.
So my calling was I was the assistant clerk over technology for the state presidency, which is kind of like a mission-centered leadership position who takes care of everyone's computers. But it doesn't make sense in Community of Christ as much as it does LDS because everything is spread out more, at least in our part of the faith. But the – what it really meant was I had full access to the handbooks online and had access to the leadership side of and the pastoral side of the LDS church. And so I had heard through Mormon Stories that there was a new policy that was changing the way that the church treated people who were LGBT and specifically had been married or in a new same-sex marriage. The policy said that their children could not be baptized and that they needed to be excommunicated. And I saw that the policy was leaked online, but instead of reading the leaked policy, I literally went to the handbooks and read the policy myself firsthand and really felt terrible inside. I didn't ever expect the LDS Church to fully embrace or accept gay marriage and same-sex marriage, but I never expected them to stop allowing their kids to be baptized and to take such an aggressive stance. And in hindsight, that's been their stance on people who have been practicing polygamy and other things as
right.
well.
Right, so it has precedence that they had already been excluding other people, but no one knew about it, really, unless they were part of those families.
And growing up in Southern Utah with the FLDS presence there, it completely made sense in that context. And the other thing, I'm going to cut you off there, Josh, but the other thing that really I thought was worse than any other part of that policy was if at the time the children turned 18, if they wanted to be baptized and receive the priesthood, if they were male, that they had to disavow their parents.
Right. They had to move out. It's really hard to do. I don't even know if they expect anybody to do that.
The policy says.
Right.
And that disavowal was just as much a problem to me as any of it. And for some reason, it hadn't felt as wrong when it was applied to polygamy, which I thought was something people chose very specifically.
Right.
But
which they do. I mean,
there's a lot of cultural arguments and aspects to be made there too. Yeah. But the thing that was crazy for me was that most people especially a lot of the people I knew who were pleased that same-sex marriage had become a blessing in their life and an opportunity for them to experience love in a way that society had never offered them. What I saw happening was that their kids didn't want to disavow them and that this wasn't a healthy thing. This was actually ruining families and the new definitions of families that were starting to come into our culture and in our society. And the decisions that allowed same-sex marriage and those types of things, a lot of them came from court cases out of Utah, and it was Utah's way of handling it that turned it into being legalized nationwide.
Yeah, they handle things so poorly that it kind of works the opposite. It's
like the law is just so unjustly applied that when you actually take attorneys and justice and actually start applying it, it was done in such a way that it did open it up nationwide. It took the Supreme Court to open it up nationwide, even though it had been made legal in Utah a little bit earlier through some other court actions. But that had a really serious impact on me and my faith. I had had a couple of feet in and was kind of dipping my toe in other ideas. But
did you have other issues that were kind of like piling up, or as people say, on your shelf?
one of the other big issues, and I thought I did do an interview with Karen Peter a while back on about the liturgical calendar that's on an earlier podcast episode. Right. And on there I mentioned, because it was a little bit more raw to me at the time, there were three members of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles in the LDS faith who had passed away in a very short time. And for the first time in my life, they were calling three apostles. Mm-hmm. And I was really intrigued, especially having lived in Nashville, having seen what diversity was like in people's lives. I was very interested to see if this was the time when diversity would come to the LDS Church through its leadership. And I was really surprised at the October conference just prior to the November policy that three apostles were called who were so similar in their behaviors, their looks. There was no diversity at all. In fact, they all cheered for the University of Utah. They weren't even BYU fans, which by Utah standards was just kind of ironic. But But I didn't realize at the time, until I've spent more time on the University of Utah campus, that Thomas Monson, who was the prophet at that time, actually worked on that campus.
And multiple others.
And was very much a part of the inner community there. And that inner community under his leadership is what expanded in the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. And so that the diversity to me didn't really reflect God's church and what the world looked like. And also the November policy just made it so that going to church for me went from being something I tolerated and a good place to get some sleep. And the building was always too hot, but that was okay, to a place where I didn't really feel welcome and I really didn't feel safe. And I had in the LDS term, they have this thing that nobody ever does called a personal priesthood interview, where they're supposed to ask you about your leadership, and the elders quorum is supposed to ask you about how you're fulfilling your calling. And we got a new elders quorum president who decided to have one of those. And he started asking me questions, and I started feeling really frustrated and verbalizing how frustrated I was with the November policy, with the treatment of same-sex couples. And I ended up actually leaving that interview and just walking out of the building. And that was the last time I ever really attended the full block of LDS meetings. And from there, I wasn't really sure where I was going to go or what I was going to do. I basically listened to the Mormon Stories podcast, at that time another group of podcasters called the Infants on Thrones, who they were a little bit more edgy.
Yeah.
And definitely
more satirical.
Absolutely more satirical. Really played a fantastic role in helping me deconstruct my faith in a very healthy way. So my Sunday morning went from going to church and worshiping to taking care of the laundry while my wife and kids went to church. And I would listen to these different podcasts. One of the things out of all the Mormon Stories podcasts, the episodes that John Hamer did, I was really fascinated with. And John Hamer also did a lot of the episodes with the Infants on Thrones. He was one of the quote-unquote infants for a period anyway. And I really started connecting with the things that John mentioned. And every time he would read a scripture out of the Doctrine and Covenants from recent revelations in Community of Christ, I was really touched by that. And so I went online to a website called Mormon Spectrum and looked to see what different organizations there were. And I was in Panguitch, which is the middle of nowhere in Utah.
Yeah.
But I found the Community of Christ had opened up a seeker congregation in St. George, Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Nancy Ross and,
and
the group there. And so I thought I would try it out and see. I also ended up getting tickets to a Pet Shop Boys concert up in Salt Lake, which was on my bucket list, and thought, well, I'll just drop in on the Salt Lake congregation and see what a real meeting's like. And I just know it's the October time frame, and I know it was an entire year after that November policy. This would have been around 2016.
Okay.
So for about a year, I went to just listening to podcasts for my church experience, and Project Zion played a huge part in that.
Right. I do want to go back, though. So how was your wife and kids processing this when dad is not going to church and staying home and folding laundry?
My wife understood what was going on, and she felt bad too. And we were in this small town living by her parents, and this is an extremely small town that's probably 97% LDS. And they just saw me as going inactive. They didn't really see me as going in another faith direction.
Mm-hmm.
What happened during that time through the Infants on Thrones and through the Mormon Stories, I was able to successfully break down my faith. And when it came time to rebuild, I basically just tried to make a decision. I didn't know if I necessarily liked atheism.
Right.
I like spirituality, and I think that it plays an important role in my life for happiness and things. And just swearing all the time wasn't really the answer to things. And so that's when I started listening to the Project Zion podcast.
Okay.
And basically listened to every episode right as it came out, and used that to help me rebuild my faith in a different direction. And I did attend the Community of Christ service up in Salt Lake and found the hymns to be amazing. The words inside the hymns had more meaning, and I was really pleased with that. So I went ahead and checked out the congregation in St. George.
Yeah.
And realized
fairly small.
It was about 10 people. Yeah. And I absolutely loved the people I met there and and those kind of things. But I realized that I was kind of halfway in between St. George, or I could go towards Provo. And St. George's congregation met later in the evening, which meant I was going to have to drive on two-lane roads with a lot of deer.
And in the dark.
Yeah. And for those of you in the Midwest, if you ever go to Cabela's, all the trophy deer come off the mountains that I would have been driving through in my little Mini Cooper. And so I'm not talking about hitting a small deer. I'm talking about hitting these huge, biggest deer that are in the world. And so I had to make a decision based on safety. If I went to St. George, I would get home later. If I went to Provo, the meeting started a little bit earlier and I would get home a little bit. I wouldn't be driving quite such a dangerous time. And so I decided to go up to Provo. Another nice thing is the Provo House Church was only every other week. And so I didn't have to go to church every week. And I started going every other week to Provo House Church and just really enjoyed it. During that time, I had some pretty amazing things with my career. Some of the things that I had done in Penguich with the having a new superintendent that used to be my computer teacher in school. We started sending devices home with kids and really doing some wonderful, amazing things. And a job opportunity came up in northern Utah that I'd been to the district for some meetings and had seen what a neat place it was and had been pretty impressed. And so I decided to apply for the job, and that would have been in May of 2017. And I applied at Murray District, and after waiting for quite a while, actually a couple of weeks, found out that I got the job and made some arrangements to start moving up north. And I think one of the neatest things, Josh, and this, I'd been attending House Church for a few months and was excited to be up north where I could go to Salt Lake each week and attend House Church if I felt like it. Mm-hmm. There were people in Community of Christ like Blair White and Penny Young who actually opened their homes to me and helped me transition to living up here with living with them. They just literally opened the doors and said, here's a place to stay. Come stay with us. And
yeah, like if you need to spend the night somewhere.
Right. But this was more like spending a month and spending a couple of weeks. And the hospitality part of the enduring principles that these people lived was just unbelievable for me because I had a real need at the time. Mm-hmm. But I was able to transition successfully into my job up here. My family and I were able to find a house, which was difficult because the real estate market in the Salt Lake area is unbelievable. I mean, we couldn't find houses that would stay on the market for a week.
And they're expensive.
And they're far more expensive even than we paid in St. George and Nashville, which had become expensive areas while we'd lived there. But we were able to make it work with some help from my parents, and my family relocated up to Saratoga Springs just down the road from you guys.
Right.
And it was fun because I got to meet you guys at reunion and through service projects up at the campground and other things. And so we knew that we had friends in Saratoga.
I think that's the first time I met you as a service project.
Yeah, we were going up to Camp Red Cliff, and I hadn't been there before. I was also having a pretty big struggle in Garfield with my job at the time, and it was very healing and very neat to come up and spend those weekends up here doing service and going to men's conference and things like that that allowed us to get to know each other. And of course, for me, it was interesting because I got to meet the people that had run the podcast that had played such a huge role in helping my life. And so that was really kind of fun. And it was also a good chance to start learning about Community of Christ and seeing not just what a community there was in northern Utah, but as people would come in from other areas like Robin and Karen and others, how everybody knew each other in the church and
that's how one of the benefits
a true community it really was.
Right. Apart from it being a true community, that's just one of the benefits of having a smaller church, is you know people nationwide, you know?
Yeah.
Or even outside of the country.
So. And people would friend me on Facebook, and I would start meeting people through that as well, and right. found it to just be a pretty powerful experience. One thing I should say, well, I did go down in St. George and spend one weekend with Ron Harmon. Emily Rose is the pastor down there, and she brought Ron up with her one weekend to answer questions for people. And I had a chance to meet with him late in the afternoon, and we visited for about 2.5 hours. And I honestly had envisioned that I was probably getting into the church that was very much like the one I left. And I asked him questions like, tell me about your Quorum of the 12 Apostles, and tell me about your beliefs with this, and how do you treat LGBT people? And I was really surprised, because I was expecting to have answers that were like where I came, and they weren't. They were completely the opposite. They were, not only do we embrace LGBT people, but we have them be our leaders. We give them the priesthood. We perform their weddings. We love them. This worth of all persons really means that. And that was really powerful for me. And learning about the different members of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, I knew there would be women and men, mm-hmm. which I thought was great. I hadn't ever really got hung up on women's ordination or anything like that, but being a privileged white male, I really never needed to. But I definitely appreciated the diversity in the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. And even now, as I see new pictures, and with the two apostles that they called last week, I know Dave. I've edited his podcast a few weeks back, right, and yeah. have met him when he's come to Salt Lake to present, and haven't met the bishop over Africa, but mm-hmm. I'm sure she's an amazing person. Just really appreciated what unity of diversity really meant. And fell in love and embraced the enduring principles.
Right. So this is a story that you told me. Maybe we can get into it a little bit. But it was Ron Harmon that you talked to about the enduring principles.
Yes.
And that's kind of like what introduced you, or at least planted it in your mind, what the enduring principles were about.
Yeah. And when I was asking him questions, I got pretty personal with him. Uh-huh. I'm a pretty deep thinking person. And I saw this as someone who was actually there when they put the enduring principles together. And so I asked him, I said, what is it like to deconstruct your faith and to start over? And how did you pick the enduring principles? And he talked and shared his personal experience, and I'm sure that's for him to share another time, but mm-hmm. what I was really touched by was how everyone kind of started bringing their own thoughts and their own passions, if you will, to the table, and what should these look like and what should they be? But yet, as they went and worked through it over, I think, a week or week and a half, as they started actually opening up and listening to other people and listening to other opinions, the what ended up being the enduring principles was very different than what they expected or what they started with, and that it was a very powerful process of coming together in community to do that. And then I was really touched by that. I was really touched that he would open up to me and be vulnerable enough to share such personal things. Here he was, an apostle, because I can tell you that the apostles I'd met in the LDS church just weren't like that. And especially if you ever visited with them in person, and
never had that opportunity. They're very out of reach for the common member. I think that's a big thing. So they're kind of more.
Yeah, it's hero worship. It's a whole different.
It's a hero worship. And it took me a while. I don't mean to butt in here, but that took me a while to just change my way of thinking, because it was like almost a hero worship of knowing Robin Linkhart or any of the other ones. And then slowly it's just like apostles are just the same as anybody else, you know?
Well, I found with Community of Christ, and this is not just Ron and Robin, but and it's so different calling them by first names, but knowing them too. But Locke Mackay was visiting the Salt Lake congregation in July, and uh-huh. I was interested to meet him because I knew that he was a descendant of Joseph Smith and had grown up in Australia. And it was so interesting to visit with him, because he just wanted to know about me, and his interests were in what had brought me into Community of Christ. And I was so touched that someone who's traveling all around the world and is doing amazing things for the two-face together, honestly, and those kind of things, would sit down and actually be caring more about me than what he could share about himself. And I've always been really touched as I've met different people in Community of Christ with their humility and with their caring attitude. And it's been a very powerful thing for me. I've tried to learn from it and emulate it more when I can.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And there definitely is a lack of ego. Not to say that they don't have their personal passions and stuff, they do, but there is a lack of ego if you've ever met them.
Well, I feel like the call of an apostle in Community of Christ really is to be out with the people and sharing the message. And I've loved every time we've had someone visit our congregation, either in Salt Lake or come down to House Church, where usually we get a chance to visit one-on-one even more and have great experiences.
So you're attending Salt Lake and the Provo House Church. About how long was that going on until you made the commitment to join? And what was it that made you decide to make that choice?
Well, it had been over a year and a few months, and I found myself getting very involved in Community of Christ with the Forward with Community program that Brittany does, mm-hmm. and Nancy, coincidentally.
Yeah.
and I had asked for that to be started and offered what I could do to help it along because I was living in Panguitch and it was going to be so necessary for me at the time. And so I was involved with that a little bit. I had mentioned to Karen some things about the Project Zion podcast and ended up becoming helping you guys out with certain episodes to clean up the noise or things like that. And eventually ended up taking an assignment to edit the podcast from time to time, which I really enjoy. And so I found that I really was becoming a part of the community. I just wasn't officially a part of it. And, you know, the disavowal part of the November policy that I talked about, one of the really interesting things about joining Community of Christ was that I was able to take when my father baptized me when I was 8. And I really, that meant a lot to me that my dad was there and that it was my baptism. I didn't have to get baptized again, that I could actually accept and have Community of Christ accept that baptism and not make me disavow the church I had grown up with or the faith I had grown up with. And I had confirmed people and had confirmed a couple of my kids as well. And so I'm used to the confirmation blessing and the confirmation prayer. But the first time I heard someone saying, "Confirm you a member of Community of Christ," that was so powerful to me. And so I made a decision last January. So that had been January of 2018 to actually get confirmed. And I made a decision to do it in House Church in Provo because that was the place that had really been there for me when I needed it and had been a really powerful thing. Excuse me. And so I made the decision to get confirmed there. It was very interesting. I did join Community of Christ and seek Community of Christ with my wife's blessing.
Yeah.
In Mormonism, it's very difficult because you're married in the temple and you're being the same faith and the same worthiness and the same everything is such a huge part of that.
Right.
And I love my wife very dearly. And she was watching me kind of go through this all as a midlife crisis, just as much as anything. And wasn't quite sure how to take it, but there were
so
some.
She's not going through this journey alongside with you.
No, I actually, one of my favorite things about the Latter-day Seeker website is that members of Community of Christ don't have to proselyte to active Mormons. And I found this is a place where I could come and have a safe space, but not feel like I had to bring everybody with me in this proselyting way I'd learned on my mission and all the old things I had been conditioned to think that way. And so I did, with my wife's blessing, attend Community of Christ and with my wife's blessing get confirmed. Right. And it's been, she has made some sacrifices with us being in a mixed face marriage for sure. My 5-year-old daughter struggles because she wishes we were both at the same church. Mm-hmm. And she sometimes will cry to go to church with me, and I make her go to church with her mom. I told my wife I wasn't here to take my other kids with me, that this was just my journey, and I needed for my own spirituality and my own sanity to make this change. And she's been supportive. My kids went to reunion last year and had a wonderful time. My kids, who are at the right age, have gone to kids camp and will continue to go to kids camp. And so there's, I think it's neat that we can, that our kids can see both faiths, that our kids can also see that our faiths aren't necessarily in conflict, even though with the LDS church, it's sometimes they try to make it feel that way, and they try to make it the battle for truth and righteousness and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah, from Community of Christ's perspective, looking back towards the LDS church, it's not that way at all. So like it's only perceived, or what people would bring to it the opposite way.
Right. And I've my whole family doesn't necessarily know exactly what's happened to me. I did not invite them to my confirmation. The only people who came besides the members of house church or visitors there was my wife and my two daughters.
And so your 5-year-old daughter, Briellen, she did something during your confirmation.
So it was really interesting because I asked to be confirmed by Carla Long. Carla was actually there the first time I attended in St. George and kind of got to see my entire journey from the sidelines as a pastor and as a leader. And I wanted to be confirmed by a lady too. I thought that was pretty powerful for my family and for to celebrate what the priesthood really is in Community of Christ. And so Carla and my daughters, both my daughters are actually pretty close because they like to go to house church with me. And while Carla was confirming me, my daughter went up and put her hands on my head and started talking, which of course everyone chuckled. And then she tried to run and get my wife and ask my wife to come up and join in as well and blessing me. And to me, that was very touching. And it, in contrast to the way LDS people do ordinances, it broke every taboo of the priesthood inside the LDS faith. But in my experience, it was just the most beautiful thing in the world. And I loved that my 5-year-old daughter could join Carla in blessing me and confirming me and feel like such a powerful influence in my life. And it was fun because I got to choose the songs and I chose to sing For Everyone Born. And during that song, Bree got really excited and started dancing around, and Blair, the other pastor at house church, actually started dancing with her. And then we sang the verse For Young and For Old, A Place at a Table. And I don't think Blair had really volunteered himself to be the old man because he's not necessarily that old, but it fits so well into it. And it was just, it's one of my fondest days of my life as far as what a great experience it was to join Community of Christ and become part of community and to be able to move into a new direction in my spiritual life.
Yeah. So how do you navigate things with your wife to this day?
So first, I try to be ecumenical at home, just like Community of Christ is ecumenical. Mm-hmm. I have allowed my children to be baptized or confirmed, and my youngest son, who's still 11, just received the priesthood, and I went and attended and supported him in that. Okay. I was not part of the ordination, but did attend church that day with him and played a supporting role. We're raising teenagers mostly right now, and raising teenagers definitely has its challenges. I feel like my wife is just the sweetest person in the world, and she's well equipped to handle some of the challenges that come up in a teenager's life. And she's a nurse, and she's a very caring and kind nurse. And so the nice thing is my job's a government job. So I'm there from 8 to 4, and then I'm home. And so she can work in the evenings when she needs to. And those kind of things, I've tried to support the kids going to church with her and growing in faith there. And we've had our ups and downs with that. And my kids' stories are theirs to tell later on when they're ready. Right. But it's been, we've been able to navigate it together and focus on each other as much as we can. And that's really helped it. And the fact that she was kind enough and loving enough to be supportive of me coming here. And she knows that I'll support her in anything she does there as well.
That's really good. I know it's got to be hard, but it sounds like things are working out.
It is, and when we have hard times together, we try to sit down and reconcile them out and understand them instead of use them against each other or play petty games with each other, because it gets really tempting sometimes to just be snarky and to just kind of respond, whereas taking a reconciling approach to things really helps.
Well, that's just great, Jason. I'm so glad that you've shared your story with us, and it sounds like the story is not finished for you or your kids or your family, you know, and you've just been a blessing to Salt Lake congregation. I don't make it down to Provo as much, but I know you've been attending there as well. So I just want to thank you for being on the podcast and sharing part of your story with us.
Well, and thank you for letting me share. It's wonderful to give back to the Project Zion community that's given so much to me.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use. And while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.